is the UR Business Network.
Welcome to Making Headway on the URB Business Network. This is your host, John King, president of Headway Strategies Consulting, based here in the Boston area, bringing you today's show. As the Making Headway title implies, the objective of our show is to provide entrepreneurs, executives, and managers with information about emerging or current topics that could have a significant impact on their business. As the host, I will moderate a discussion with one or more subject matter experts who have an in-depth understanding of today's topic. We do not intend to enter into a compare or contrast of different solutions, but rather present the benefits, issues, and concerns associated with the topic as each business situation is somewhat different. If there's additional questions from listeners, the host and the subject matter experts' contact information will be provided in a blog for each show. Today's topic is SEO and online marketing, the new rules for business. This topic should be of interest to all businesses and organizations that have a website and want to maximize their online marketing potential. Our guest today is Hans Riemer, president of MarketVantage. MarketVantage specializes in internet marketing solutions, helping each of their clients develop and implement effective internet marketing strategies for a positive impact on their business. Hans is joining us by phone from his offices in Groton, Mass. Welcome, Hans.
Thanks, John.
And our producer today is Nathan Roman. Nathan, thank you.
John.
Okay. Hans, before we get started, could you tell us a little bit about your background and your experience with online marketing?
Sure, John. Well, I was originally hired right out of school to write software for a company that developed high-end computer graphics terminals. But after 3 years of coding, I moved into a marketing sales support role. And 3 years after that, I actually took a plunge and did a couple of stints as a quota-carrying sales rep before I ended up back in marketing. But as a marketer, this time in sales had given me a unique appreciation for the challenge of finding leads that sales reps faced every day. In the mid-90s, the internet came along, and as a sales and marketing guy, it wasn't hard to see that this would change the relationship between buyers and sellers. Because until then, sales was driven by numbers, right? You made 100 cold calls, maybe you booked 10 appointments, and from that, you'd make one sale. With the internet, the buyer became the hunter, looking for the seller instead of the other way around. And of course, it's a lot easier to sell to somebody that comes looking for you. So sales and marketing management started, you know, instead of asking how many calls did you make today, they started asking, you know, how can we get prospects to our website? And at that time, I was working for technology companies in the corporate world where I hired agencies that would help us with our public relations. They'd help us design brochures and collateral, help us plan trade shows and events, even help us build a better website. And I started wondering, why can't I find a company that can help me develop and execute an online marketing strategy? Where can I find an agency like that? So that was in 2002 when I started my company, MarketVantage.
Okay. Well, how do you define online marketing?
Good question. Basically, it's using the internet as a way for buyers and sellers to find each other. There's a lot of pieces to it and the ways you can combine the pieces. For example, you work on making sure you show up at the top of the search engine results, or you can advertise in the search engines and other places where your prospects are likely to see your ads. You build special pages on your website called landing pages where you drop people that click on your ads, and you present them with some kind of call to action and hoping that they're going to give you their email address and permission to contact them. Maybe use social media channels like Twitter or LinkedIn to find and connect with prospects. Maybe use an email newsletter to reach out to your list periodically, or better yet, make a marketing automation software platform that helps marketers nurture their leads. They can measure response, stay top of mind with prospects and customers. Most successful companies are using most, if not all, of these channels to find and close business these days. So that's how I define online marketing, I guess.
Okay, well, you mentioned search engines, and we talked about SEO for search engine optimization. It always gets brought up when building a website, and people want to make sure they've got the right keywords in order to get there. How would you describe that, and what are some of the key considerations that need to be evaluated when you're putting together a website?
Well, you know, look, everybody that owns a website wants Google to feature them or their website at the top of the search results. So it's funny, a lot of times my conversation with a prospect begins with them asking me what that will take. And the truth is, it's not something we can cover in 20 minutes. But I'd suffice it to say that the successful search engines, and we know who they are, right? They're successful because they provide their users with high-quality search results. So let's start there. You should ask yourself why your website deserves to rank ahead of all of your competitors. Is it really better in every way? Because if it isn't, Google has invested several billion dollars in software that can tell whether your website is really awesome or really awful. And there's not much my team can do with SEO that's going to put an awful website at the top of the search results. Now, having said that, there are certainly a lot of best practices that people should follow to maximize their chances of ranking well for their important keywords. They fall under a number of categories, like content. You want your content to be interesting, engaging, useful. There's technology. You want your web pages to load quickly and have a structure that's easy for search engines to scan and index and be able to adapt to a wide variety of platforms that people view web pages on these days, which is like anything from desktop computers to smartphones. Visitor engagement is important. Remember, the search engines want to connect users with websites that they are going to like and spend some time on. So if your site isn't attractive or if it's difficult to navigate, well, you should start there and fix that, okay?
Okay. So is there a secret sauce that we could offer up?
I wish there was, you know. You know, website owners have always wanted to get at the top. You know, I think it's content. There's engagement with visitors. I mean, a lot of websites are using Google Analytics on them now, which sends signals back to Google on how your website visitors are engaging with your website. So that's important. Google likes to see social buzz. They like to see you, your employees, your website being mentioned, in places like Google Plus, obviously, but also, you know, on Twitter and in LinkedIn, places that Google can crawl. Now, Google doesn't crawl so much on Facebook, but it wants to see, you know, you got some buzz going on, that there's some traffic coming in. It's sort of a sad case of the rich getting rewarded and the poor getting poorer, but there is some truth to that.
Okay. Well, over the years, search engine optimization has changed, I think, and there's some different rules that are in play right now. Can you elaborate on what's happened there and what we need to be aware of?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've got to be careful, right? People have gotten carried away a little bit in the effort of trying to show up at the top. So search engines have gotten a lot smarter about how their pages are ranked. In the beginning, you know, it was website structure and things you would look at. You know, I remember days when we would look at sites and they were written in Flash, okay, and the search engine couldn't really crawl Flash. It didn't know what words were appearing on your site because they were all embedded in the imagery. So, you know, the first thing to do was kind of make a site that had real content and text on it, things like that. People then figured out, well, keywords are important, so they would stuff, you know, keywords onto pages, and it became hard to read the copy because it was so stilted, you know. Then along came the whole notion of inbound links, right? If you had a lot of links pointing to you, and actually Google had some patents around that whole strategy of using links to algorithmically determine where your website should rank, you know, people took advantage of that by posting lots of comments on blogs, posting lots of crappy quality articles on article repositories, you know, just a lot of junk content. And, you know, sad to say, it really worked for a while, but the search engines got better and better at blocking that kind of stuff. And then in the social engagement realm, you know, you could go on Fiverr and you could buy Facebook likes and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, nowadays that stuff really doesn't work anymore. Interestingly, Google published information. It was just in the Wall Street Journal just this morning. They said they were going to give better rankings to websites that used an encrypted connection with their visitors. So, in other words, using an HTTPS connection rather than HTTP. We don't know how much they will weight that factor, but it's something you certainly keep in mind. And we saw a document that was leaked to the public just a week or two ago that originated from Google, and it was written for their human testers. So they've got these people that work at Google and make sure that their algorithms are doing what they're supposed to do. And one item in the document was about gauging how well the ranking algorithm handled websites in relation to their online reputation. So in other words, if your company has a bad score on Better Business Bureau's website, your website should rank lower. How's that for impact to your SEO work? So those are some of the things that we see changing and you've got to watch out for.
And with that article in the Wall Street this morning, I really kind of elaborated a bit on the fact that if your website isn't secure, how comfortable are you going to be about putting your financial information in there for credit cards or things like that? So that certainly is a very key point, I think, to bring forth.
Yeah. Well, even beyond that, I mean, there's people whose websites have gotten hacked and defaced or even had viruses or malware posted on the website. So if you load the web page, you can get infected. And Google will certainly, if they detect that, will block your website from showing up in the search results, because the last thing they want to do is send a user to a page that's going to infect them with malware. So yeah, that security is important. So for example, if you've got a WordPress site, you should make sure that your WordPress and your plugins get updated periodically, because some of those updates have to do with security. So yeah, that's a really good point.
Well, now you've got me scared because I have a WordPress site.
Okay. Sorry.
Look at that.
Yeah.
So the other thing I've heard is that, you know, Google can penalize your site based on some infractions or something they're concerned about. What does that mean?
Great question. Well, it's definitely true that your website can be penalized for activity that Google determines is done purely to improve search rankings. And generally, the first sign of trouble is that your traffic from search engines drops pretty significantly. You can see that if you go into a tool like Google Analytics, you might notice that your visitors, the number of visitors per day is dropping, and then you can drill in further and see where that traffic's coming from. And if you notice that the drop is entirely on the search engine side, and if it's particularly on Google or Bing, the biggest impact, of course, is going to be from Google, and that can put a pretty big dent in your business if you rely on that traffic to bring prospects to your website. But I think you should be careful before you assume that the drop in rankings is the result of a penalty. It could be simply a change in Google's algorithm, because they're looking at several hundred factors that affect your rank, and these are all weighted, and maybe they just changed the weighting on some factors that impacted your site negatively. We mentioned, for example, HTTPS. They didn't used to care about that. Now they care about it. How much do they care? Well, probably not enough that it would really tank your rankings and your search traffic, but maybe it's a combination of factors. So you can actually, see your search traffic drop noticeably even though you did nothing wrong. I'd say the best way to tell whether it's a penalty or not is to set up and use a Google Webmaster Tools account. This is a free little thing you can download from Google, and they'll put messages in there for you if there's been a penalty applied. And if you don't have a Webmaster Tools account, then there's no way for you to see those messages. You can call Google, but they're not going to tell you. So to prevent a penalty, the basic rule is to avoid doing stuff that's solely geared toward improving your rankings. Unfortunately, there's a lot of gray area in there, but Google does provide some guidance. If you go to Google and type in Webmaster Guidelines, then you'll see pages of information come up on Google's support site. But I'll warn you, Google can change rules on people, too. I know a number of people that when they got a link from other websites, they'd ask the webmaster of the other site to put a keyword in the link. So, for example, let's say you sell, your website sells green widgets, and your company was Acme Corp. Well, you'd find somebody that had like a, review that reviewed widgets, different companies that sold widgets, and you'd say, hey, you ought to list me in your list of companies that provide. They go, yeah, okay, we'll list you. You say, hey, could you make my link that goes to my website not say, for Acme Corp, click here, but make the clickable part say green widgets. And that would actually boost your search engine ranking for green widgets, right? That was called an anchor text backlink. But if you did do too much of that, and Google never told you that was something bad to do, they actually rewarded you for doing it. But only recently, Google finally came out and said, well, if you've got too high a ratio and we get suspicious about the number of anchor text backlinks you have, we're gonna apply a penalty to your site. Well, that was kind of a moving the goalposts after the game, and a lot of people got caught in that. And unfortunately, it's a lot of work to contact those website owners and ask them to change the structure of the link or to take the link down. So sometimes our work now is with companies who come to us after they've gotten a penalty, and they ask us to help remediate the situation. But I will tell you, it's usually a lot of work, and it does tend to be costly. But yeah, penalties are real. But first you should make sure you've actually been penalized before you go and spend a lot of time and energy trying to fix something that actually isn't broken.
Well, if the rules are changing on a regular basis, how do you keep up with that?
Well, we belong to we do this full time, right? So we belong to a number of different forums. There's a lot of publications out there. You do have to kind of sift the wheat from the chaff. You know, you start to recognize people that seem to have reliable information. There's a fellow at Google named Matt Cutts who publishes stuff about this topic. He's the head of what they call their web spam team. I will say personally, and I hope I'm not, you know, crucified for this later for saying this publicly, but you know, I actually don't believe every word that comes out of Matt Cutts' mouth. I think he's trying to influence certain behaviors, and some of the stuff he says may be more along the lines of what he wishes people would do rather than what Google actually enforces. But you know, it's good to listen to this stuff, and it's changing constantly, and it's important because again, it can impact your business.
Well, are some of these changes such that you would you need to redo the whole website, or are they superficial, or how would you classify them?
Well, like I said, you might need to contact people who are linking to you. There are tools you can buy that analyze the links to your website and can give you information about them, so you can start to see if there's been a pattern. Like for example, if you're a marketing person in a company and there was somebody there before you, you don't know what went on. You know what they might have done, but I can give you some best practices if you like. I'd say first of all, I'd focus on conversions. Conversions are basically when somebody comes to your website and they turn into a lead or a sale while they're on your website. So they provide you at least with an email address and some contact information. And what that involves is having, you know, good offers, a crisp, clear call to action. Maybe you build custom landing pages where you drop a visitor, maybe from a paid click. And a good landing page typically doesn't have a lot of distractions on it. It doesn't have a lot of, you might strip off the navigations that's on the regular web pages, just to kind of remove we used to call that unsupervised thinking. You want to minimize the amount of unsupervised thinking that goes on. Secondly, I'd say navigability. That means moving around on your site. Sites should be a responsive design these days. That means that your site should be very readable, whether somebody comes to it on a desktop machine with a large monitor, or whether they're coming to you from a smartphone, which means you've got to design the site in a way that will play nicely on both of those and not just, you know, get a tiny version of your website on the smartphone. But your navigability means that people should be easily able to find what they are looking for. So people will enter your website typically through the homepage, and then they can self-select into the area that they happen to be interested in. The other thing I would do is I'd look at analytics, whether it's Google Analytics or some other tool. I really like letting visitors and prospects tell us what they like and what they're interested in. You know, look at the pages that are the most popular. Look at the content people tend to gravitate toward. And you can, you know, you don't have to fix everything. You don't have to boil the ocean. I like to use what's called the 80-20 rule. You focus on the 20% that really matters. And if you do that, you can really kind of tilt the odds in your favor a lot better.
Okay. Well, I know you gave me a couple best practices with some websites. We won't try to read those on the show here, but I will publish them in the blog to give people a chance to go look at some of the options that may be available to them.
Yeah, let's good. I think that'd be great.
Let's talk about paying for online advertising. And just as, you know, from a personal note, I was looking at doing a campaign, and I was for my business, and the pricing structure seemed to be more based on interest level clicks and really sales focused clicks. And by the time I got done with it, it looked like it was going to be pretty pricey. What's your take on really how you want to structure your online advertising?
That's a great question, and it's an interesting observation, actually. Yeah, we do a lot of work setting up and managing paid online advertising, and people might ask why someone would pay us to do this when, for example, you know, Google will help you for free. first of all, it's not just Google, right? You can advertise on LinkedIn, Twitter, Bing, Facebook. Each of these platforms is different, and each of them offer you some level of support, although I'd say probably Google is the most approachable. They've got a toll-free number, whereas the others are primarily more self-service oriented. And then LinkedIn, for example, won't help you unless you commit to spend $25,000 per quarter, which is, in my opinion, it's a lot of money to find out whether or not it'll work. But they all kind of, they try to make it look easy. But if you just go with the default settings, I will say this, you're probably going to get killed. I, like most people probably on this call, we get these cards in the mail from Google that say, hey, it's easy, you know, write an ad, set a budget, pick some keywords. How hard can that be? And I guess my answer would be, it's easy to buy clicks, right? The more money you spend, the more clicks you can buy. What's hard is buying only the right kind of clicks, and that's a lot harder than people think. And it's harder still to turn those clicks into leads or sales. Now, you have to start with, you know, the right clicks. If you're paying for the wrong kind of clicks, which are people that aren't really interested in buying from you, then it's impossible to convert them into leads or sales. But assuming you can get the right kind of clicks, now you've got to, like I said, get them in front of the right kind of offer at the right time. The other thing to remember in all these platforms are in that you're in an auction. You're bidding for clicks against other advertisers. And so every day, more and more people are getting on board and getting into trying to advertise because it's a hot market. You look at Google's revenue numbers, and it's clear that that's happening. But if you've ever been in an auction, you know that the more bidders there are, the higher the prices you're going to have to pay, which is exactly what's happening. I mean, I remember 10-cent clicks years ago. Those are gone forever. I mean, clicks we see today are costing $5, $10, $15, even $40 or $50, and that's for a click, not a lead. I believe the Journal, not to overuse them, but the Wall Street Journal today, I think, mentioned that Facebook clicks had increased an average of 133% over the past year, which may explain why they recently announced record profits, right? But I would say if you jump into pay-per-click on your own or even with Google helping you and you haven't done this before, then the likelihood that you're going to turn a profit is not good. In fact, it's pretty slim. I would take a course first. I'd buy some books. You know, it's a fairly robust system. Particularly Google's is very robust. No offense to anyone, but it's kind of like being an amateur and walking in the high stakes table, you know, in poker in Vegas. And even for people who, like us, who do this every day, year in, year out, it's challenging. We hear people say, well, I tried AdWords, it didn't work. But most of the time we can look in the account and I can tell them 5 or 10 reasons right away why it wouldn't work but based on the way they did it. So doing it right is hard. And, you know, and not all of it's all about keywords. I mentioned LinkedIn, you know, where you can target by industry, by company size, by role in the company. And we've had a lot of good success with LinkedIn for some of our clients. But you've also got to consider that someone clicking on a LinkedIn ad may be in an earlier part of the sales funnel and buying cycle than someone who does a search on Google or Bing and sees your ad. So you have to structure your ads and offers accordingly. Okay?
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I mean, this is I don't think this is for the faint of heart. I think that
No, it's not.
You need to have some guidance as you go through it. It's again, when I was going through it myself, I looked at it and thought, this could get pretty expensive pretty quick.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we're just about out of time, and I wanted to thank you. But then also, do you have some closing thoughts you want to pass on to the group here?
Yeah. I mean, we mentioned at the beginning the whole concept of marketing automation. I think that's a new technology that's really kind of moving the ball forward. And so we got companies that kind of like Constant Contact and HubSpot at one end, and Marketo and Eloqua at the other end, and a bunch of players in between. Marketing automation does something revolutionary. It helps sales and marketing people get along because the salespeople aren't chasing low-quality leads and reporting back to marketing on quality, and the marketing people don't need the salespeople to tell them how well their marketing activities are working. So I see that as an area that's, you know, rapidly adoption. It's kind of where CRM was maybe 10 years ago, and if you've got salespeople who are spending a lot of time talking to people who are not interested in buying, and you got marketing people who are sorely lacking data to know which of their campaigns and programs are working, then that might be something to look at and give a try to.
Okay. All right. So in summary, I think some of the key nuggets I heard from you was there's a level of effort to do it right. It's not something you just kind of do on your own.
I'd say that's true. Yep.
Focus on it. And the other question, I guess, we think came about is that because of that, you need to consider what you can do yourself versus what you can outsource to someone like an organization like yours.
Yeah, and I mean, we have run across people who do a good job on their own, but usually they've been at it for a while. It takes a while to get good at it. And, you know, in some cases, people want to do this stuff themselves, and so our relationship in the beginning is fairly, we're heavily involved, and over time they kind of pick it up, they want to do it, and they've got the resources in-house to do it, and that's fine. In other cases, people say to us, look, you guys are better at this than I'm ever going to be. You do that part, I'm going to run my business, and, you know, we'll continue to work together. And that's fine too. I mean, most of our relationships tend to be fairly ongoing. That's just the nature of it.
Okay. Well, Hans, thanks very much for joining our show today. And I appreciate your time and your counsel as we went through this. How does someone get in contact with you?
Well, we're on the web at market-vantage.com. We have a hyphen in there, market-vantage.com. Email is hjr@market-vantage.com.
Okay.
And we're located in Groton, Massachusetts. The number here is 978-482-0130.
Okay. And I'll post this on the blog so that the listeners have it, but they'll do that. So let's just kind of wrap here. And Nathan, thank you very much for producing our show today. If there's questions that people have, and I like to throw a line from Mike Rowe from Dirty Jobs, if you have some suggestions on content that you would like to hear about on the show, please get a hold of me at jking@headway-strategies.com. Again, that'll be in the blog. And thank you very much for listening. So this is John King on the URB Business Network, reminding you to continue listening to Making Headway, because remember, we can help you make headway.
This is the UR Business Network.